church. Because as the Bible calls us a family, that's not my term, that's the Bible's term. We're a family. We know from our earthly families that people have to carry out, be assigned and carry out responsibilities for the betterment of the family. The family is bigger than any one person. Is that true of your family? Yes? It better be, or you have a dysfunctional family. It's no different in the family of God. We have to learn to work together. To work together, we have to put aside ego. If you're an egotistical person, you've got no use for a family, you check out, you leave. If you're an arrogant person, you check out. We have to humble ourselves, learn to work together, communicate, encourage, challenge one another, and then your family, your workforce, and your church become all that God wants it to be. So we're in Acts chapter 18, if you'll go there. Aren't you glad that you can eat whenever and you don't have to do games like that? Acts 18. Our summer series for 3 months has dealt with second missionary journey of the Apostle Paul. We spent 3 months last summer on the first missionary trip. Next year, hopefully, we'll spend three more months to finalize Paul's missionary trip, his third missionary trip. The reason we look at this is simply we want you to know that we sit here because of the endeavors of people like Paul. Without Paul, we probably would not be here as Christians. And we need to remember our sense of history. I am alive, an American citizen, because my grandpa, Larry, decided to come from Poland back in the teens, 19-teens, just prior to World War I, decided to come to America. My mom was born in America in 1920. Made her a citizen. Because of that, I'm a citizen. Do you realize all of us have a history? And if we don't, if we let people rewrite our history, and that's going on, yes? If we let people talk badly about our history, whether it's personal, whether it's a church history, whether it's our business history, whether it's our national history, it creates chaos, folks. We have to stop and be grateful for what has transpired in the past. Because someday you're going to be the past. And if you want your family to carry on, then you have to operate your family God's way. If we want our church to carry on, we have to operate it, if you will, God's way. So we're looking at the Apostle Paul, and I say to him, thank you so much for suffering and for sacrificing so much so that we could be here. I call what Paul has done, all three of these missionary trips, his odyssey. An odyssey is something that just means that you have traveled a long and arduous journey in life. We know the Iliad and the Odyssey, if you remember ancient writings by Homer. It was just his journey. It was his travels. All of us have been on our own odyssey. It's called life. Right? And no one here knows everything that you have been through. No one here knows every place that you have ever been to. No one here knows the stories of your life. But in a family, what I've learned by watching my uncles and my aunts get into their 90s and die, and then my mom at 97 and die, the minute they're dead, everything they've experienced in life is gone from you. You never get to ask them another question. So if you want to know something, you better what? Better ask now while they're still with us. So that's an odyssey, and that's part of being a church family. We want to learn each other's stories. I've said for years here, you may not necessarily like everybody here, but we can learn to love one another, and that's biblical. And how do you get to like somebody? By spending time with them, by listening to them, by sharing life with them, eating a Snickers bar, of course, doing goofy games, taking part in the games and activities. That's how we learn to like. Not everybody here will be your best friend, but you'll find a lot of friends here. And the thing that keeps me going is that if I walk across the room and I meet you and I extend my hand to you, and then I open the door of my life and take time to invest in you and ask you to come into my life, and then I pull up a chair and actually have a heart-to-heart with you, you may be my next best friend. Do you have enough best friends? We've all got acquaintances. We've all got friends. But when you come to best friends, some of you don't even have a person that you can identify. No, because you've told me that. This is what church is about. It's about Christ being the center of our life. Not a person, not their personality, but Christ. And we have to make the effort to get across the room, to open the door and pull up a chair, hear with one another, and then let God prosper that. That's exactly what we see Paul doing throughout his odyssey. At this point, Paul is, we would say, going back home again. That's the title of this message. We've been on it for 12 weeks. This is the 13th week. He's going back home. Where's home? Where he started from. He has traveled 2,800 miles. By the conclusion of this message, 2,800 miles. 2,800 miles, like walking from L.A. to New York City. In America, outside of the Rockies, it's pretty flat in the middle. For Paul, everywhere he went, it was rocky. And there weren't paved roads, and there was no buckies. Anybody know what a buckies is? There's no buckies on the way to Florida where you can stop and refill. It was hard for him. Because he did that, we sit here. We should be grateful for that. The book of Acts simply shows the path that Christianity took as it traveled out of Jerusalem, out of Asia Minor in Syria area, all the way into Europe. A careful study of the book of Acts and the lives of the people that we encounter. Some of those people you can't even pronounce. Here's what I've told you. If you can't pronounce somebody's name in the Bible when you come to it, what do? Just make one up and keep going. Have fun with it. Because we're not Jewish, we can't pronounce all of these names. But we should look at their lives and we should be challenged by their faith. Not just be content to be religious and churched, but we should be challenged by the faith. Look at what they did and they had so little to do it with. And then you look at what we've got. Paul didn't have 78 acres. He didn't have a 23,000 square foot building. He didn't have a church staff. He didn't have vehicles. He didn't have the internet, probably a good thing, right? And he changed the world. It should stir our imagination. If Paul was able to accomplish that in his lifetime, and here's the deal, some of us, I'll throw myself in, some of us have already outlived the Apostle Paul. You're older than the Apostle Paul when he died. And you look at what Paul did with so little, and then you just measure it sometime against your life. What have you done for God? Do you realize probably 3/4 of our audience here right now is older than Jesus when he died? That should stir you. That should challenge you. You say, if God could use them, God can use me. With limited resources, in the midst of a hostile pagan environment and a hostile Roman government at times, it all depends on what Caesar was president, if you will, they accomplished a lot. They changed humanity, changed the course of history because they cared and because they wanted to more than anything else. They had jobs like you. They had families like you. They didn't spend time scrolling like us, but they changed the world. They changed the world. That's why we're looking at this series. The last 2 weeks we saw Paul in the city of where? Corinth, which is in the Greek area. Greece would be like this. The Peloponnesian region here. Athens, Greece here. Macedonia, way up the map where Alexander the Great came from. That's all Greece. That's Europe, folks. Paul had never been there before. He went there intentionally to tell people about Jesus. He's centered in this city of Corinth, great commercial region in all of Greece, but really one of the central hubs of the entire Roman Empire. There's never been an empire bigger than Rome in terms of landmass, in terms of influence. This was the commercial hub when Paul was there. Had two great seaports. And I'm not going to go through all that again, but all traffic from west to east, east to west, south to north, north to south, all came through Corinth. Commercial shipping center. Hundreds of years, that city. Not just 10 years, not 30 years. Hundreds of years, it had a reputation as a den of sin. Most of us have heard of Vegas, right? Did any of you look at the news? Did you see Fox News the last 2 days about the New York City and all the brothels that have been closed down there, but yet then when they go into the liberal magistrates just send them back out again? That's a den of iniquity. Hundreds of years, this made Vegas and New York City look like a Girl Scout camp. It was horrid, absolutely horrid. They had no morals and all manners of lifestyle. Anything you can imagine and then some was not only accepted, it was also encouraged. Can you imagine? And this little Jewish boy, who's now a Christian, has a sense of morality, is there. Paul was tired. He was fearful. He wrote about this in his first letter of Corinthians. But he stayed true to his calling of making disciples. What really matters in our life, what really tests us in our life about the quality of our Christian life, is when times get tough. It's easy to quit. It's easy to walk away. It's tougher to resolve issues. It's tougher to keep going. It's tough to reconcile. It's tough to admit that we're wrong. Would you agree? Paul stayed. He built relationships in the religious world, the secular world. He brought people to Christ. He established them in their faith, and then he taught them how to make disciples. The measure of our life will be seen by what we've produced during the tough times. It's easy to be a Christian when no one's on your butt, when no one's bugging you. It's tougher when you've lost a job, when you and your spouse are fighting, when one or all of your kids have gone bonkers. It's tough. It's easy to quit. It's easy to walk away. Would you agree? It is. Someone has made this statement. I've modified it just a tad bit. So this is a Donism, and I wish I had been this smart originally, but I just modify things sometimes. Even the smallest candle, can you say that? Burns brighter in the dark. Now meditate on that. Light a candle right here in the daytime. Would you not see it? A little bit. Turn all the lights off. Do you see what it's saying? The darker it gets, the brighter it burns. And that could be said of Paul. The darker the world he was in, the more his Christian faith illuminated the people around him. So as a way of remembering our summer series, if you look on your table, there's a glass jar. And what's inside the glass jar? There's a candle, and I'm going to ask you to take one of those home with you. Don't take it out now. Take it home with you. I'll tell you what we're going to do with it later. It's to remind you that God has created you and God has saved you to be on mission. You're to be a light in a dark world. The Lord expects each of us to minister to those that come across our path, whether that's here at church, school, work, or in your family situation. We're to be a little light. The darker the situation, the brighter you should show yourself up to them as a Christian. For 3 months here, you've learned about one guy. His name is Paul, Saul, whatever, and his small team. Some of you've heard some of the names. You may not remember all of the names, but the good thing is this: God does. It's easy to remember Paul. Who are the people that helped Paul? Who are the people that supported Paul? Who are the people that picked Paul up when he's a bloody mess and put him back together? We don't know all their names. And whether you're remembered by men or not is not the issue. It's that God knows your. And that's enough to send you home with. And if you think about it, God knows you. God cares about you. He created you. He saved you. He put you on mission. Isn't that good news? He didn't have to. He chose to do it. And as people on mission, and people like Paul and his team, they accepted Christ. They lived like Christ. They ministered to others just like Christ. They intentionally made disciples just like who? Christ. And the small candle of their life, because candles, all you light them and they will burn out. It's just a matter of, that's true of you. You only live so long. Your candle only burns for so long. If it's lit. The small candle of Paul and his team's life made a huge difference in a dark world. We're the evidence of that. You're going to take one of these candles home in about a half hour or so. Over 2 weeks, here's what we've learned from Paul on the second missionary journey. I don't know about you. I love this series. It challenges me to want to be better. It makes me look in the mirror and say, come on, Don, quit whining. Get up and do something for God, something significant, something will make a difference. Not so I'm ever remembered. But that so the name of Christ, the cause of Christ, continues another generation. So here's my observations. Paul thrived in the dark world. He was in Corinth for 18 months. Most of it by himself. He thrived. He didn't just survive. He what? He thrived. Secondly, Paul was encouraged by his co-workers, by his new friends that he made, but also by the Lord himself. If you are thriving in the midst of darkness and you're serving God, God will bring people around you to encourage you. God never promises us an easy road. He promises to be there for you and with you as you go through things. Thirdly, Paul converted several high-ranking Jewish people. There are a number of other people that came to faith, but two people that we should remember as we read Scripture is a guy named Crispus. He was the head of the Jewish synagogue. He became a believer. Now, how hard was it for him to have all his Jewish friends and family there, and he turns to Christ? His life didn't become easy overnight, and neither will yours. And then they replaced him with a guy named Sosthenes. Okay, Sosthenes. He became the new rabbi, the new head of the synagogue. And then they encouraged him, well, you've got to get Paul. He's turning people to this Jesus dude. So Sosthenes goes before Gallio, the head of the Roman governor. He's a Roman governor, and he starts pleading his case, and he goes, Gallio goes, go away. You bug me. He says, this is a Jewish issue. And Sosthenes is like this. And the Roman said, I don't want to hear it anymore. Go away. He turns around and hears all the Jewish people that believed in him to make him the leader. They say, you failed us. You know what happens when a football team doesn't do so well? They fire all the players. No, they increase the pay for all these college players, right? What do they do with the coach? All of a sudden, he quit knowing how to coach football. Had 3-4 good years, has 1 or 2 bad years. No one ever stops to say, maybe it's the players. It's got to be the coach. He became a moron. Okay? We won 21 games in a row here at Maple Valley when I was coaching, and you could not believe the criticism that we got as coaches of that team in the midst of this. You bunch of morons, don't you know how to... 21 in a row is not bad. You know what happens when churches struggle? Who do they fire? When our government doesn't do so well, what do we do? Well, at least here in America, we don't. Well, yeah, I guess we do try to assassinate them, don't we? What do? We vote them out. We vote in some other yo-yo, right? Isn't that the way life is? Doesn't that happen at your job? Come on, people, grow up. It's not always the coach. Sometimes it's the, or it's the circumstances of the game. He converted several people. Sosthenes then, he turns around. The Jews all look at him. They don't just say, well, you did a pretty poor job. Here, let's take you aside and instruct you how to give a debate properly. You didn't read the teleprompter, Sosthenes. That's the problem. No, they beat the crap out of him. Can we say the word beat in church? Think about that statement. They beat him up. Sosthenes is all bloody and stuff. And then Paul probably comes over to him. We don't know how this happened. Somebody picks him up, bandages him up. We know it wasn't the Jews. They just tried to take his life. They bring him aside, and he becomes a follower of Christ. Later in 1 Corinthians, he's with the Apostle Paul, writing back to the Corinthian brothers. Paul had an impact. Paul was spared any further persecution because the Lord said, I'm protecting you, and the Roman governor said, I'm protecting you. Lastly, Paul established a congregation in Corinth. He would later write two letters, epistles, or books back to them. But then this Paul, this is a dark, corrupt city. He plants a church, he goes away, he's in another city, he writes two different letters to them, and then Paul makes two more journeys back there. Did you realize that? Paul really cared about these people. In part, they were very immature, very carnal. They needed more love, more care, more encouragement than the average person because of the environment they came from. Does that make sense to some of you? Yeah. So now Gallio, the Roman governor, he gives a favorable decision. You're in Acts 18, verse 18. This is where we pick up our story. That's all backdrop. It's a dark, vile city. People's sinful lifestyles not only are encouraged, but now you become a Christian and you've got problems. Because remember the 1,000 prostitutes that lived up on these mountains and they'd all come down? This is how you were used to worship. You enjoyed going to church back then if you were male, but even females had their guys. So it's a dark place. Look at Acts 18, verse 18. Paul stayed on in Corinth. What's the next few words? For some time. Now here's the thing we've got to understand. Why did he stay there so long? He was there 18 plus months. Why? Because people needed the love. People needed the encouragement. People needed help. They didn't know what it was like to live a godly life. They didn't know anything about Jesus. Didn't know anything about the Jewish faith. Somebody had to invest in them. There's a lot of people like that in churches, and we have them here. You have ingrained sinful behaviors and attitudes. You came to Christ at 20, at 30, at 50, but you know what? You lived a lifestyle of sin up to then. That doesn't all just turn off, because the mind is a computer, true? Whatever you sensed, whatever you experienced, whatever you said, all of that is recorded here. You have memories. So all these new Corinthian Christians, they have a tough time struggling with their lifestyle. They had emotional brokenness. They had social bonds that they could not drop, because now this person who's a Corinthian, they've become a Christian, so they go to church here, but they're still working with a bunch of pagan, immoral people. Does that ring a bell? And sometimes it's not easy being a Christian in your workplace or your school. True? Welcome to the church at Corinth. There were people that had dark spiritual bondages. They had opened their life to Satan, whether that was through some form of drug, whether it was through a type of false god that they worship. But Satan had a grip on their life. And it's easy to say, I've become a Christian. You still have to deal with all the years that you were not. Now, God transforms your life. That's the beauty of a Christian. But it doesn't happen overnight. And it requires somebody to invest in you, to walk alongside of you, to clap for you, to yell at you, to pick you up when you fall and say, let's take another step. That's what church is, or should be. Church is not a game, it's a family. And it's a family for broken people. Everybody in this room is broken in some area of their life. Why? Because you're a sinner. And you've got some issue in your life that either you can't let go or you cling to or you worship. That's the value of church and being in a home group and being in mentoring where you're accountable to somebody and where you can be honest and say, I need help in my life. And I'm glad for the men here that have come to me over the years and said, can you help me in this area? Don't you want some help to deal with your past? To be better than what you have been? Why would you accept Christ in your life and continue in the same lifestyle? It does not make sense. That's the value of church. That's why Paul lingered there. It's not easy to kick old habits, would you agree? God will transform you, but as He works inside of you, you have to take a... And you won't take a step generally if you don't have somebody there going, come on, you can do this, come on, come on. Oh, look at you, you fell in the mud again. Here, let me help you up. Okay? You need people in your life that care about Jesus and care about you. It's not easy to change your life, but Christ can change your life if you take a step and you involve yourself with other people. Agreed? Agreed. Life transformation is the key, folks. It's not coming to church one out of every 3 weeks. Church attendance doesn't make you different. Intellectual assent to the Scripture. Go, well, I believe the Bible. That doesn't change anybody at all. Life transformation is the key. Is your life changing? Are your attitudes and your behaviors becoming more like Jesus and less like you? Think on that. That's life transformation. God will do it, but you have two roles. One, to take a step, and the other is what these guys demonstrated. Stay what? Connected with somebody who cares about you. Life transformation is always seen by a deeper commitment to Christ's church and to His mission. It's not just the character inside. It's being committed to God's family and being committed to the mission that He's put us on. So we're not sure how long Galileo's decision stayed, because he said, Paul, you're okay. I only see this as a Jewish matter. You just go do what you're doing. Keep talking about this Jesus guy. I don't care. It's better to have somebody in government that just allows you to be a Christian than somebody who hinders you from being a Christian. Yes or no? Oh, isn't this timely? We've got a month till we make that decision. Don't think of personalities. Think of people's policy. Pin dropped. Could hear that. That's not a matter of being political, folks. That's a matter of being Christian, using your brain. Never vote a personality. Vote their party's policies. And how do I know which policies? The ones that most closely align with your pocketbook, your union, right? Oprah Winfrey. They better align with who? Because He holds you accountable for that. So as I think this through, look at verse 18 again, the tail end of verse 18. Wow, I love this stuff. Then he left the brothers and sisters and sailed for Syria, accompanied by Priscilla and Aquila. Remember, we met them already? So Paul's been in Corinth 18 months, and then he says it's time to leave. You're going to leave one way or the other. You're either going to go on mission, or God's going to bring you home. Because if you're not out on mission and God hasn't called you home, it means you're staying where you are when He wants you on mission. We have to always be open. What's the next step, God, that you have for my life? So when we look at this, it says, then he left the brothers, sisters, sailed for Syria. So notice there's brothers and sisters. There's men and women that have come to faith. Paul had invested his life in a team. I looked at that simple verse. I said, there's some observations here. He invested his life in a team. He didn't just sit there all by himself, just go to church and go home. No, while he was there, he led people to faith. He mentored them. He encouraged them. He trained them to be able to do mission just like he was, which means telling people about who? About Jesus. Another observation I had is that when we look at Paul, when our lifestyles are pleasing and producing fruit for God, we can confidently say he's going to guide our path. If you're not living for God, if you're not on mission for him, you're foolish if you think that God's blessing you. Satan can bless you as well as God can. He will keep you busy. He will keep you religious. He will keep you working. Why? So you're ineffective on the mission God's given you. How do we know if God is clearly guiding our path? In this passage here, it says, in Proverbs 3:5, it says, trust in the Lord with what? Part of your heart. With your pinky. All your heart. Do not what? Depend on your own understanding. Verse 6 says, seek in how much? All you do, and he will show you which path to take. When our lifestyle is pleasing and we're producing fruit, we know we're on the right path. Does that make sense with anyone? Okay. And here's another observation. Paul spent 18 months there, but he spent a lot of time because he was other places before he ever got there. Have you noticed how much fun you can have when you're on a team that gets along? That's why we want you to experience stuff up here on the trail. Have fun with people. Get to know them. Everybody's somebody else's weirdo. You may not have met yours yet. Think on that. That's why we do it. It's fun when we work together. But when a team doesn't work together, what results? Anything good, really? Okay. So, end of Acts 18:18. Keep reading. Before he sailed, he had his hair cut off at Caesarea because of a vow he had taken. This is one of those verses you look at and you scratch your head. You're going, why in heck is God telling me that Paul went and got a haircut? Have you ever wondered about that verse? He got a haircut. And you and I are going, well, what does that mean? I got his haircut. I'm with Nick on every Friday morning for the last 3.5 years. About every second Friday, it seems like, he's got to get up from our mentoring meeting and says, I've got to get my hair cut. Please stand. Folks, does he look like he needs his hair cut? It never gets any longer than that. Okay, Paul gets his hair cut. Why? Because as a Jewish guy, here's what Jews would do. If they wanted to really devote themselves to God, they would take a vow. Now, we know of something in Scripture called a Nazirite vow. We don't know that this is what it was. But a vow means this. Normally, Gary would stand. A normal person in the first century's haircut would look like this. They have a little more hair than Nick. It looked like that. It's called the Roman cut. They put a little bowl on his head and trim around. Some people would have their hair down to here. Okay? Shoulder length was long, but was acceptable by some. But for a Jewish man taking a vow, where'd your hair go? Because it was over a period of time. So a Jew would let their hair grow, and they say, I'm going to live for God, or I'm just going to think about God for the next month, or the next 5 years, or whatever it is. But when that vow was ended, you'd get it cut. The longer hair, everybody would go, oh, you must be doing something for God. Because they could visibly see it. That was your commitment as a Jewish person. And then when you get it all butched, you're saying, I have fulfilled my vow to God. Now, does that make sense to you? He's been in Corinth for 18 months. He's been on mission for a longer period than that. He's now ready to go home, and he says, I have finished. I've done what I said I would do. I would go to this dark place. I would represent God. I'm now moving back home. Time to get it done. That is what that verse is all about. Look at verse 19. Paul boards a ship. They arrived at Ephesus. This is a 250-mile journey across some treacherous seas He goes from Caesarea to the western shores of Turkey. Remember Troas? We talked about it's south of there. I've been to the city of Ephesus. I know Lisa, one of our staff people, has been to Ephesus. The ruins are magnificent. It was a magnificent city. And I just walked around like a little kid taking pictures. Click, 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 click. Because this is where the Apostle Paul had been. Verse 19, they arrived at Ephesus where Paul left. What did he do? Priscilla and Aquila. He himself went to the synagogue and reasoned with the Jews. A couple things that stand out here. His custom was that whenever he came to a new city, he would begin in the synagogue and speak to Jews, and he would always leave part of his team behind to nurture and care for and teach the people who came to faith. This is why our church has a mentoring program. This is why our church puts you in home groups. This is why our church has all of our 56 or whatever it is amount of Grace U classes to train people up so that they can be used to nurture the lives of new believers. Make sense? You have a chance to be part of that. All you have to do is say, hey, I'd like to be mentored. I'd like to take a class. I'd like to be part of a home group. Now, what we see here, that is not the synagogue that he went to. That is one of the seven wonders of the world. Anybody know what was located in Ephesus? It's a giant temple. It seems like there's temples everywhere over there. Temple of Artemis, or that's the Greek goddess of her job description had like 15 different things she was goddess of. So it's like, come on, pick one. But in the Roman world, they called her the goddess Diana. You ever hear that name? This was one of the seven wonders of the world. Magnificent facility. Paul goes to Ephesus. It seemed like every city he goes to, there's some great big marble building where somebody's worshiped. Right? It's no different if you go anywhere in the world today. Go to Bangkok. Go to Manila. Go to Jakarta. Three of the, and Delhi. We'll throw Delhi in there. Four of the biggest cities on planet Earth. They all worship some different type of God, not necessarily Jesus. It hasn't changed, folks, in thousands of years. People worship something. Yes? Okay. Paul, we learn in verse 20 when you look at that, when they asked him to spend more time with them, he goes to Ephesus, and you can see Ephesus, he's over, let's see if I got my little gizmo. Thanks for leaving that up there. Right there, he leaves Corinth, and he goes over here to Ephesus. Okay, that's a pretty dangerous stretch of water just because of the wind, seas, etc. Goes to Ephesus. That's 250 miles. It may not look like that on the map. He goes there. They receive him well. They want him to stay, but he, two words, does what? He says no. He had another agenda. Well, what? He quit caring about people? Really? No. He had an agenda because there's a religious feast that he had to get to or wanted to get to called the Passover in Jerusalem. We know calendar-wise when Paul only had a six-week window of what we would call sailable, can we say that, sailable, navigable waters? 6 weeks from the middle of March to the end of April. After, before that and after that, you just didn't sail in these waters. Paul knows I got to get moving while the time is right. So off he goes. Look at verse 21. He is now up in Ephesus. Can we go back there, Bryce, just for a moment? He now goes from Ephesus and he's got to come back to Jerusalem. He goes to Caesarea Maritima, then walks down to Jerusalem. That's a 650-mile jaunt. Altogether, from Corinth, he's just traveled 900 miles, approximately. So I say, hey, the man's more of a man than what I am, because I'm not riding one of those little dinky boats in those wild waters for anything. It says in verse 21, but as he left, he promised the people of Ephesus, I will come back if it's God's will. Then he sets sail from Ephesus. He does come back later on his third missionary trip. And he stays there 3 years. 18 months at Corinth. Now 3 years he will spend at Ephesus. His odyssey comes to an end at verse 22. Look at verse 22. When he lands at Caesarea Maritima, now notice the key words. He went up, because Jerusalem sits on top of a high mountain range. All Jewish writers describing travel to and from would say you go up to Jerusalem. And when you're up, if you're going anywhere else, you're going down. He greeted the church there, and he went down to where? That's where he started from. 2,800 miles. In your mind, can you picture going from L.A. to New York? It took him 3 years to do that second missionary trip. Lots of physical persecution, just the walking and the hiking and the weather change, lots of physical punishment. Countless people came to Christ. Churches were planted, and he got to see some of the most amazing cities in history that there's ever been. He got to see the Temple of Artemis, or Diana, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world. One of those seven wonders is still around. You know what it's called? It's called what? Pyramid of Giza. You ever see pictures of the huge pyramid? That was one of the seven. And doesn't that look like, man, that must have been something in its day? All seven of these were something in their day. Paul got to see so much, experience so much. He took the gospel into places where they had never, ever heard of Jesus, heard about Christianity, heard about the scriptures, and saw many people come to faith. What's our takeaway? I only have one today. Each of you grab a candle out of your jar. Here's our takeaway. I would light these, but George Shook would have a coronary, being a fireman. So we're not lighting these. Now here's the deal. All of us have been given a candle. Not these. Your candle is your life. Your candle is your life. You see, you didn't create those candles. The candle maker did. You didn't put them in that jar. I did. You didn't just take a candle out till you were told to. See, there's a beginning and an end to a candle, if used properly. There's a beginning and an end to every one of your lives. As I thought about candles this week, here's what I thought. As we think of humanity, and we're part of it, would you agree? Some are given a candle, and they do absolutely nothing with it. They do nothing that matters for eternity with their life. They go through life stumbling about in darkness. Can you picture that? Because that's what the world is, culturally and religiously. It's dark. It's anti-God. They go through life, and Jesus used that analogy when he talked about that men love darkness because of their sin. They don't come to the light. So you get a life and you say, I'm not letting God have it. I'm not going to light it. I'm not going to do anything for him, because we're trying constantly to live in darkness because our sin is pleasurable to us for a short period of time. That's why people don't become Christians. No, people don't sit out there and go, well, Christianity does not make sense. It's not logical. Watch this. It's totally logical. It's a matter of history. How can you accept one piece of history and decline another piece? Oh, I know, because if you accept the truth of Christianity, you are condemned as a sinner, and you have a decision to make. You either renounce your sin and live for God, or you keep living the lifestyle you want. And that's exactly what Jesus said. Men love darkness because of their sin. So they keep trying to create their own little temple to worship in, their own little life, their own little neighborhood, their own little business, their own little family. It's all about you rather than worship God, with a big G on his chest. We keep trying to make a little G-O-D, and that's who we are. We become God. That's why people don't become Christians. It's not a matter of logic, because it's a matter of history. It's a matter of observation. People don't become Christians because they love their sin, and they don't want to admit that they're a sinner, and they don't want to renounce ownership and control of their own life. They want to be a little God. Does that make sense? So they do nothing with their candle, and unfortunately, there are people in numerous churches in America and around the world where they never light their candle. They're content to be religious. They bring a Bible, they sing a song, they throw a few bucks in the offering plate, they use churchy words, and then they go home and there's no difference in their life because of Jesus. Why? Because they're afraid to light the candle, because if I light the candle, he's in charge, I'm not. Then there's a second way that people react to a candle is they will light the candle. They want to be a Christian, and they realize that they're a sinner, so they light that. Oh, look at the pretty light. And then they get distracted. And then Satan gives them a tough time. And there's a little song that says, "This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine." Right? Yeah, and we keep going. But then there's part of the little song that says, "Don't let Satan it out." And they let Satan blow it out. They let the cares of the world break their life and break their candle. And pretty soon it goes out. And then what the heck? They live as a broken person the rest of their life. They wanted to do right. They went to church. They made a decision for Christ. But they took their eyes off from Jesus and let somebody else mess with their candle. Or they neglected their candle. And I know in this church, we've got people like that. Your life is not vibrantly alive for God. It's not shining in the midst of darkness. You're stinking, running from bush to bush with your little candle. Don't let anybody know that I'm a Christian. I don't want to be mocked. I don't want to be laughed at. And pretty soon, with all your movement, it goes. And then you're not even living for Jesus anymore. And then the third is this. Some will use their light for who? Jesus. And it burns down, and it burns down, and it burns down, and, you know, it gets, hot wax and soot and all that. But then it's going down, and quick you say, "I got to keep my life going for Jesus." And then you light a new one, and then you walk around saying, "I'm on fire for Jesus." As a child, now I'm a teenager, now I'm a young adult, now I'm becoming an adult with kids, I'm going to help my kids, now I'm becoming an old person like Denny Shaver. My hands don't even work well. I'm trying to get that out of there. I got arthritis. And then someday it will, what? But then God's going to say to you, "Well done, good and faithful servant." Amen. Yeah? So as you go home, whether you light it or not, I want you for the rest of this year, you've got October, November, December, 3 months. Just keep the candle somewhere where you see it regularly. It could be in your car. Probably not a smart idea, right, George, to light it in the car while you're driving. Okay? Don't do that. But keep it where you can see it and let it be a reminder. And if you are looking at it regularly and you're saying, "I want my life to count, I want to help other people come to Christ," then do something in your last 3 months of 2024. And then we just may, on New Year's service, we may have you bring your candle. We'll definitely have more should you have misplaced your candle. We will have more, and we'll light a candle, and we'll look towards the new year about what God's going to do in your life, in your family, in this church, and in your involvement in the many areas where he has you placed. Does that make sense? I love the Apostle Paul. I love studying him. And I hope that you've gotten something out of our series. We'll renew this with verse 23 of chapter 18 next year, should you still have a candle that's alive. All right? Hey, I enjoy teaching Paul. I enjoy the Bible. I enjoy y'all. I hope you go out of here and remember, I have evidence that there is a God.
Well, you can't prove that there's God.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can. Totally blowing. But it's not the World Series. It's far better than they've been in 10 years. Would you agree? Is there not a God? I said that last year because there was that other group. You know who they are. Yeah. So when you leave here, you've got a candle. That's your light. Do something with your life that matters. Now, we have a couple hundred more chairs back there. We would love to pack this place out in the coming months. But they can only be packed out if they're brought here and invited here. We don't want people from other churches. It's just wrong to go out to your neighbor who goes to another church to come to our church. I don't want that. In fact, I would tell them, go back to your church. Tell your pastor that you have visited another church, but stay there unless God's led you from there. But what we want to do is reach people who have no and have no relationship with Jesus. That's who we're trying to influence. Because I want to party with a lot of people in heaven. How about you? You want to do something for God? Then bring somebody to faith. Bring them to an event. Bring them to October 6th event up here on the hills, and let's just have some fun. What do you say? Amen. Paul Adrianson, would you stand and pray for us as we go?
Look upon the one who bled to save me. And walk with him for all eternity. There will be a day when all will bow before him.
Hey, have a good week.